So, Tom, let's talk about you and let's talk about why you started up Inside of Mind and do a little cliche brief introduction to you.
Sure, man. Yeah. So my sort of story started when I was about 15 and I started really struggling with depression. I didn't really know why. At the moment, at that time, I wasn't diagnosed with ADHD as I am now. I got diagnosed when I was 16. So I really struggled through that time of, you know, going into sixth form, going into year 12, year 13, really struggled with my mental health as a whole. And it was kind of, I wouldn't say unheard of for people to talk at that time, probably about 6-7 years ago now, but it was uncomfortable for me because obviously I didn't want to burden anyone with my problems. And through that time, it was probably the worst few years of my life, but I learned so much as well. And the reason I started the podcast was I felt like during that time I had no one to relate to. I had no one to look up to in a way outside of my family that I could be like, you know what, he's going through the same thing. And, you know, that gives me peace of mind. And I felt like I sort of battled that on my own and I felt like I couldn't tell anyone. And starting that podcast, Inside of Mind, which I have now, was sort of a way to, you know, show 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old me, you know, you can change and you can help other people who are at that stage. And now I've been able to bring on Joe as my co-host, who was my first guest. And he had a very similar story to me, whereas he just didn't look up to anyone, couldn't relate to anyone. And the people that were giving advice were people that actually hadn't gone through what we'd gone through, but were like GPs, or nothing against GPs, not bashing them at all, but were people that had learned in the books rather than actually experience firsthand what was going on. So that was the main reason we started Inside of Mind.
Yes, you're right. There's a real need for people that have actually experienced things and know what it feels like, as opposed to just knowing what it's like technically, I suppose, and sort of logistically. So that's a really good point. So what happened? Why do you think, obviously 15 is a difficult age, and going into 15, 16, going into like first year of college and stuff like that, all these changes, and you're sort of, there's more expectations and people around you are shifting and everything's growing and you've got to keep up with it. Do you have any ideas to why things got a little bit difficult?
Yeah, I do. I think when I look back at it and I sort of picked everything apart, it all came back to my ADHD. And at the time I didn't realize, but I moved away to college for sixth form, so year 12 and year 13. So when I was 16 to 18, I moved away. I moved to Gloucester, was playing rugby on a scholarship. And being out of that support bubble of being home and being on your own, you know, we got food at the college, but majority of the time I was coming back from training, I was feeding myself, had to grow up very quickly. And I think sort of just being away at that time, when you're in a bad headspace already, just completely ruined me. And I find it really interesting now I'm looking back at it. And obviously with my ADHD, having like a structure and routine is really important. And I felt like I didn't have that. I was struggling to keep up. I couldn't keep up with my schoolwork. And sort of everything just got on top of me. And then all the stuff that I had before I went away as well was starting to build up, which I hadn't talked about. And it sort of just led to me just completely bursting, to be honest. And that was the sort of the main catalyst, was that.
Yeah. And just something that came to my mind as you were talking, obviously I've only spoken to you for 10 minutes, but playing for like a rugby scholarship, like I know what rugby boys are like, and I know the sort of bravado and the laddish style behavior, and you don't really strike me as someone. I mean, I know that I could never have done that because I'm quite a sort of sensitive, quiet person in many ways. And you strike me as someone a bit more similar to that as well. So was that something that you felt you had to maintain, or are you perfectly capable of doing that?
Yeah, I felt at school was okay. School, college was okay. But going to uni, it was tough because I wouldn't say I'm like a traditional rugby guy, as you said. I'm not, I like going out with the boys and, but I'm not big on drinking. I'm not big on, you know, doing all this crazy stuff. It's just not me. Yeah. It's just, I quite like doing what I do. I'm quite introverted in a way, like you said. And I did find that hard. And I think I struggled in my uni house as well, because you're around boys who are great guys, but are just, that's, they're all sort of in that sort of culture, like that drinking culture, heavy booze. Everyone's going a bit nuts, you know. I won't say what goes on, but it's not awful. It just wasn't really me, but I just loved the sport, and I found that hard to kind of keep that balance. And it's good sometimes. It's great to go out and be with your friends and let loose sometimes. But for me, it's just that wasn't really how I wanted to be or what I wanted to do. So I guess that sort of rugby culture as a whole has got a really awful sound around it, as I'm sure you know. But I think it's just surrounding yourself with good people, because there are some great guys in those environments if you fully get to know them.
Yeah, of course.
And a lot of people who are similar to me. And I think it just was finding the right people to hang around with at that point of time. And then that's what really helped me through, especially in my last year of uni.
Yeah, it comes down to finding the right people. Unless you're like an incredibly disagreeable and highly introverted person who doesn't have any interest in anyone and in any sort of manner, then if you're that sort of person, then fair enough. But not many people are like that, so it always does come down to the sort of people that you hang around. So absolutely, let's talk about like ADHD and how have you experienced that, and what has that been like for you, the whole process?
Yeah, ADHD is such a weird one. I think at the moment, I don't know if you follow this stuff on social media, it's got such a bad reputation around it recently over the last, I'd say, year and a half. Like, a lot of these videos have made it look like everyone's got ADHD and people can't focus, when that's just not what ADHD is. And it's very stressful. So obviously, ADHD is like a neurodevelopmental disorder, which is sort of like characterized by a consistent pattern of inattention. It could be hyperactivity, impulsivity, and that sort of interferes with how you function. So a lot of it is getting a bad look from online, but a lot of it, if you don't understand what ADHD fully is, it's very stressful to deal with. So a lot of the decisions I make are very impulsive, especially when I was, I'd say, probably all the way through to 18, I was incredibly hyperactive. I couldn't sit still, was just bouncing off the walls, and just very inattentive as well. Whether I was in a rugby huddle, whether I was in the classroom, I felt like I was really trying and no one could sort of understand me. But I just wasn't taking things in like everyone else was. And that's a very stressful, sort of environment to be around at school, especially when people don't fully understand what's going on. Because in a way, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's a new thing because I've had it my whole life, but it's kind of just being brought into awareness now, that makes sense. So in a way, it weirdly destroyed my life for a lot of, I'd say my late teens. But now I've been able to get a hold of it. I can use it in a positive way now, and I fully understand how my body works. I've spent so much time researching ADHD. It is stupid how much I've had to sort of look into it, but I've loved doing it as well. And getting to understand my body better and my brain better has been great, because I'm now at this point where I can use it, as I said, as a positive rather than just let it destroy me. And if you do let these things get out of control with any sort of mental disorder in a way, it can really, really mess you up. And I'm very lucky that I sort of went through that at 16 to 18 was probably the worst of my ADHD. I'm very lucky I went through that and I've been able to learn from it. And now I'm at the age where I'm 21, turning 22. I've been able to sort of turn it in my favor. But yeah, it's a really weird one. But I don't know if you've seen any of the stuff online about it. But
no, I haven't. Tell me more. What do you mean by that?
I've seen like so many... they're not memes, but like short videos where it's been like, you can't focus, you have ADHD. And it's just like, that's not what ADHD is. And I think, to some extent, technically it is, but obviously people can't focus, like people addicted to their phones at the moment. That doesn't mean you have ADHD. But I think it's also as well, with ADHD, like, it sort of raised awareness around it. The amount of people going to GPs and stuff and trying to get diagnosed is crazy. And it's actually, they're turning people down, I'm pretty sure, in the US at the moment. And it's like a 2.5 year waiting list to get diagnosed on the NHS for ADHD, which I just think is crazy. Because if I think back to that sort of like 16-year-old me, if I had to wait 2.5 years for that, I don't know what would have happened. Because although you can just say it's a diagnosis, you know, it was a massive breath of fresh air, sort of knowing what was wrong with me. I hate to say wrong with me, but knowing what that problem was and being able to sort of capitalize on it and understand and get to learn it more. Well, I think that's crazy at the moment, is that massive waiting list. It's quite sad in a way.
Yeah, the obviously we all know how sort of stretched the NHS is, but all these, it's very complicated. I don't really know. I don't even know how to address it. Like, all these things, they blow up, don't they? And people, and you're right, the stigmatization of mental illness is a massive problem. And I read, or not maybe read, but heard, like, I swear they're like running out of ADHD medication or something in the UK. They haven't got any until, like, I don't know, maybe it's around November, so now. But so it's a bit of a issue.
Yeah, it is.
So how does it impact you? Because I am a complete novice to ADHD, so I, compared to you.
So I say probably at this point of time, sitting here today, the thing which affects me the most is sort of impulsivity to my actions. So, you know, making sort of hasty decisions without considering consequences, and most of the time interrupting others and being impatient. That's something that's pretty stressful, actually, especially when you're doing a podcast and your brain keeps telling you to do things or say certain things or interrupt or whatnot. So I reckon at the moment that's probably the worst. I've kind of got my hyperactivity, you know, under control. It did get really bad, but now I'm sort of at the point where it's okay, and I feel like I've sort of peaked off it, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's scientifically possible, but I feel like my body's changed in a way where, from my childhood to 18, I was very hyperactive, and now I'm less hyperactive, and I've got different things. But I say the main one for me is that affects my life is the impulsivity and the inattention, of just the two, which I'm trying to work on at the moment. And especially sticking on one task as well, my brain's always firing. I'm like, it almost feels like I've got 10 different tabs open in my head, and it's just going ping, 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 ping. Or I'll be talking to my girlfriend, she'll be like, did you get that? I'll be like, I was thinking about an argument I had with some random stranger 6 years ago. Like, I wasn't even in the room. Like, do you know what? That's the things that are stressful, because I really want to listen to when it comes to stuff like that, but my brain just seems to switch off. But I think the main thing is I'm aware that it's going on, and when you're aware, you can sort of fix things and get a bit better at them and learn to minimize. It's never going to go, but that's the main thing. I'm very grateful I'm getting more aware and self-aware when it comes to all this stuff as well.
Yeah, and going back to the 18 thing, that does make sense. I heard somewhere that, like, things, hyperactivity, it's linked to, like, creativity and hyperactivity and maybe testosterone or something. There's like a scale or a chart, and it all sort of peaks around 19, and then it sort of starts to, like, level out. And then that's why, like, with criminals, you get criminals, they're reoffenders. They all sort of, like, cease from reoffending at, like, serial reoffenders, like minor reoffenders. They sort of stop around, like, 28 or 29 or something. And it's kind of like that testosterone spike and that hyperactivity spike peaks off around 19, maybe 19, 20. And then it sort of goes down again. At least I heard that, and I thought that was interesting, but I should do my research, to be fair.
I feel like I heard a fact about a lot of prisoners do have ADHD because of their impulse thinking.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Is that right? Yeah. I didn't want to...
Oh, it would make complete sense.
Yeah, it does make complete sense, because you do, you know, majority of people do these actions where you just don't think. Then afterwards, you're like, I can't believe I've just done that. So it makes complete. I read that article. I must have read that about 2 years ago. I saw an article on it, and it just pinged in my head then when you said it. But no, that does make complete sense as well. Like, especially from my point of view, obviously I haven't done anything like that, but just sometimes I do things or say things where I'm like, why have I done that? It's actually quite funny when you look back at it, but it definitely can get the worst of people if they can't control it.
Yes, and also if you're like temperamentally extroverted, then you're also prone to impulsivity and hedonism as well. So addicts are often can be quite extroverted because it's that sort of, they need more all the time. Whereas, like, you know, Russell Brand is an interesting one. One of the reasons why I think he became addicted to things is because he is so extroverted. And extroversion is like there's a personality trait, extroversion. It's one of the big five personality traits. And people who are high in extroversion are very impulsive. So, and then if you couple that with being disagreeable, which means you don't care about people, you're going to end up with sort of a criminal outlook. But luckily for you, you're clearly quite an agreeable person, which means you're compassionate and stuff like that. So
that's really interesting.
You've obviously never experienced that. But that was a random little side note. But yes.
That was actually really interesting. And I never even thought about sort of addiction in the link to extroversion. But nah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I might look into that a bit more.
No, that
generally really interesting.
Yes. That is cool. Yeah. So 15, 16, diagnosed when you're 16 and you're 21 now. What happens between those years? Because that's quite a big gap. How was life like?
Yeah. So I'll say 16 to 18. I got pulled out of school my year 13 year, or year end of year 12, sorry. So that was when I was
for what?
17. Just because I was struggling so much with my sort of mental health. I was in a really bad state. I was incredibly depressed. I felt like I had no routine, no motivation, no purpose. And that took me out. And I came back for my year 13 year, and I still felt the same. I got through school somehow. And then I was always good at school, and it was just that's when COVID hit and I didn't do my A-levels. And it was kind of like, it sounds awful to say, but that COVID thing kind of saved me in a way. Whereas I was struggling so much, and I needed to sort of find myself again. I know it sounds so cliche to say when you're young, but I look back on it and I was just in such a bad headspace where I couldn't wake up in the morning. And, you know, I don't know what I would have done if I did have to do my A-levels, because I got all A's and A stars at GCSE, and I generally think I would have failed all three of my A-levels if I had to go back to school and do them. So I kind of got weirdly lucky with the COVID thing. And then through COVID, I just, obviously we weren't going out of the house, I was with my family. I just worked on myself. I got to a point where I couldn't get out of bed. I was playing video games all the time, which I just don't do. It's just not really something I do a lot. I wasn't talking to people. I was just, you know, really struggling. And it got to a point in COVID where we had the opportunity to work on myself, and I did. And I actually think I used that time really well. Sort of getting out of bed every day, having a routine, making my bed in the morning. I know it sounds like such minor things, getting out in the garden early, getting sunlight on my face, not eating high processed foods, just really, and like trying not to stress about things that were out of my control. And that helped me so much. And I think from there, COVID, I then went to uni, and I was in a great headspace when I went there. It sort of tailored off again. headspace wise. So I got really lucky again. My uni was only 20 minutes from my house, so I was able to come home when I needed, and when I needed my space. My family were always incredibly supportive because they knew I was going through things. They never tried to force anything on me. They just were always there if I needed the support, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. And then probably came to my mid second year, and it sort of everything just started clicking for me again. I started being happy. I know that, again, that sounds cliche to say, but I started enjoying the small things in life. I started being happy again. I started being myself, and just really getting back into my rugby, getting back into my work. I really knuckled down on my degree and was, you know, incredibly proud that I came out with first class honours in business to finish uni after going through such a tough time through school.
Well done, man.
And that just, that what that does for you mentally in terms of, you know, giving you confidence again, giving you sort of, when you thought you were down and out and you got up and you kept going, you were resilient. I mean, that was just, I look back on it now and I was just incredibly proud of myself, because the amount of times I just didn't want to get out of bed in the morning, or I could have just stayed like that. I could have taken the easy way out, and now I'm here, and now I've got the podcast, which we've been doing for 4 or 5 months. I mean, I feel incredibly blessed and very proud that I can be in this position and that help people, as you're doing as well. It's just going through problems, but now you're able to give people advice who are going through what you went through. It's an incredibly great space to be in. I love the mental health space as a whole. You meet some awesome people like yourself, and yeah, that's kind of been the story of 15 onwards to 21, and onwards and upwards from there, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. No, you're spot on. You carried on, and you're doing what everyone should do, which is, you know, in sort of simple terms, scratch your own itch and then teach the world how to do it themselves, or I butchered that, but, and then in more deep terms, you're taking from your own experiences and heart sort of pain and suffering, and then you're spreading it out and you're using it as a tool of good, as opposed to a tool of resentment and hatred, or sort of, you know, stagnation and sitting still. So that's absolutely right. Fair play to you, man.
Thank you. Do you find it hard doing the podcast stuff?
In which part of the podcast stuff?
Like, sort of like the talking on the, because I really struggled with this at the start. I've gotten a bit better with it because I've learned, you know, that people want the best for you, and you're just trying to help people, and that helped me relax a bit. But the first few times I got on camera, and, you know, it's weird, isn't it, when you're talking to a camera, and, well, when you're doing stuff in person or making a video, I really panicked. I was really struggling probably for about 2 or 3 months. I like literally was felt like I was having a panic attack when I was doing it. I was just stressing out so much and I couldn't think.
Yeah, no, I completely.
How do you feel with like doing your stuff?
I completely understand. I've never done what you've done, like a proper studio setup, so I can't speak from that point of view, but this little guy here, I'm kind of used to seeing him now, and I obviously don't really look at him much when I'm talking to the podcast. I look at the person. But I suppose before I did the podcast, and still do, to be fair, I have a YouTube channel, which I put up videos that were just me talking. So I feel like that was pretty good practice. But yeah, I mean, come back to me when I've started talking to people in the studio and maybe I'll freeze up and go, oh dear. But, yeah.
Nah, you'll be all good.
Yeah, good.
You were.
But it's all right. yeah, it's all good. So how many episodes have you done now of the podcast?
9.
Nice.
9, I think. I filmed 10, but I had to scrap one because the cameras just weren't good enough, and the audio came out really badly. So that was pretty stressful.
Yeah.
Especially when you're when you're sort of trying to get things out at the start. So that was pretty stressful, but I've done 9 now. I want to get to I say about 12, 13 before I call season one like an end.
Okay.
And then I'm going to pick up season two in February. So I upload the podcast every 2 weeks. And then in that week in between, I do a chat show.
Okay.
Where we basically just talk like this. And we just talk about random things, which the sort of community wants us to talk about. It can be anything random. It doesn't have to sort of be mental health based. But that's the plan at the moment. But I've done 9 episodes and I've loved every single one. And I've learned so much. You learn so much from doing all this stuff. That's the main thing. I feel so much more confident, you know, talking to people in public. Or like you said, like talking to you on this, I feel so much more, you know, confident in myself where, you know, the first couple months I was just panicking the whole time and massively over preparing. But when you come to do these things, just having a sort of structure and being able to chat as we are around it, you know, I just think it's great. I think this sort of whole space is awesome, and I'm very proud to be, you know, be a part of it in a way, and I'm sure you are too.
No, I am, yeah, absolutely. It's a great space, and it's a much needed space as well, especially with the way things are going, with, like, you know, people, kids younger than us, obviously, although we're kids, but you pretty much are. So fair play to you. Who have you had on the podcast that has, am I right thinking, I'm just looking, I don't want to say it was someone else, but you had Alex Bowen on the podcast. That's you, isn't it? Yeah.
We did, yeah.
That's mad.
That was our most recent episode. Yeah, that was wicked. He is, honestly, no word of a lie, the coolest guy I've ever met in my life. Coolest person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
He just came in incredibly polite, really humble. I think the one thing that really stuck out with Alex was he came in, he shook everyone's hand. So Gabriella was there, who takes photos, who's Joe's girlfriend, so the co-host. And Steve was there, who's sort of runs London Media Lounge. And Shravan was there. Shravan does my editing for the podcast. He's become a great friend of mine. And I just remember he could have been rude. He could have, you know, he's a big presence. He's in a way, a big celebrity. He's on Love Island. He came in, he talked to everyone for minimum 2 minutes, each person, shook their hand, was incredibly polite, really humble, and like a genuine, really, really cool guy who I generally don't think I could speak higher of someone. When I spoke to him on text, he was incredibly polite, really nice to me, really nice to Joe, Gabriella, Shravan, Steve. So the fact we were able to have him on the podcast was great. But actually getting to know him as a person and seeing what he's about, and, you know, I felt like incredibly proud to have him on, but I also felt shocked of how good of a person he was. And it's so nice to see it, because I guess when you see someone on TV, you don't see their true colors in a way. But he was awesome. He was, honestly, the episode was packed full of information, and he was really open and just fully bought into what we were doing. So for that, I was just incredibly grateful to have him on. Yeah.
And also, like, it's refreshing to see someone from that scene be a genuine person, because I feel like reality TV stars in the past, almost like maybe 3-4 years, obviously he went on, he was on Love Island in like 2015 or 2016. So he was on like maybe the first or the second series. So it was before it had become sort of incredibly artificial, and there were people on there who were clearly just out to elevate themselves and elevate their careers and status. But he went on right at the beginning. So that gives, I feel like that gives him a little bit more credibility and sort of genuineness. So that's really good that he's a good guy. That I like to hear that. 100%. Yeah. So how did you, Joe Moriarty, awesome name, by the way, big up Joe Moriarty. How did you meet him? And so he was your first episode and now he's your co-host.
Joe's so random. I look back at it. Joe and I have become like best mates. Joe and I have become so close from this. And so Joe plays at a club called Reeds Weybridge for rugby. And I just had my ankle surgery and I wasn't in the best place mentally after that. And this is probably a couple of years ago now. And then I went down to Reed's Weybridge after I started playing again, just to play, you know, a bit of sevens, get back running again, build up my confidence before I went back to my uni team and playing down at Ealing to sort of get an extra work in. So I don't come in and I'm sort of, you know, a bit rusty, because in that environment, you just can't be. Yeah. And I met Joe there and we didn't really talk, you know, we'd say hello to each other. He was really nice. He's quite like, he's a big guy. He's an intimidating rugby player, but he's the loveliest bloke and a very, very cool guy. But I didn't get to know him properly. So I was only down there for a couple of sessions and we followed each other on Instagram, like followed all the boys. And he would always do these posts about sort of mental health. And I always just had a lot of respect for him. And obviously he didn't know what I was going through at the time. And I remember messaging him just being like, hey, mate, you might not remember me, but I was down at Reed's and I'd love to have you on this podcast where I'm talking about mental health, I'm talking about my problems. And I know you've gone through a lot yourself. I'd love to have you on to chat. If there's any possibility, let me know, but fully understood if not. And he was like, mate, I'd love to. And he never fully shared what he was going through either. So we were both kind of in the same boat where people kind of knew if you knew us, but we weren't public about it because we're both very private guys. So doing that first episode with him was just incredibly raw. There was no rehearsing it. We just spoke. It was kind of like therapy in a way. That's what we both say now, looking back at it. We were just both getting stuff off our chest, sharing how we felt, sharing what we went through. And it was just so refreshing. And afterwards, it did just feel like a therapy session. Yeah. That was recorded, and the response we got from that was amazing, you know, and I was so grateful for that, not just for my stuff, but the response Joe got from his friends and family was just great. And I'm really, really happy that it's sort of come full circle and he's now a co-host, because he speaks incredibly eloquently. He's really intelligent. He asks great questions. And he also is just very quick on his feet to think things through. Yeah. And plan, and you know, I couldn't speak higher of him as a person. And now I've got him on as a co-host. It's great, and we've become really close from it. We weren't friends before; we knew of each other, but now we've become great friends, and we talk pretty much every day.
Yeah, and I think I've literally just as you were talking, this came to me. But I think I mentioned how I watched True Geordie growing up, and one of the reasons why I watched True Geordie is because he had a co-host called Lawrence. And I really think that there's incredible power and utility in having two hosts as opposed to one. Like, I was thinking, if I was watching a podcast and there were two co-hosts who I liked versus one host who maybe I knew a bit better because he was the only one, I would rather watch the one with two hosts because it's less likely to get stale, I think. I think a podcast, you've just got more people to sort of riff off and just more potential of conversations and avenues to go down. So I really think that's cool that there's two of you doing it. I think that would actually be incredibly beneficial in the long run as well. So that's great that you found him.
And it provides like a different perspective on things, exactly. As well, like you said. You know, if I'm stuck for a question, which is, I was stuck for questions the whole time. I'd have a full plan. And then you get through them, you'd be like, oh no, because you know you haven't done it for long. Having Joe there just on that first episode, I remember it so clearly where I was stuck and he just went straight in and just sort of completely saved that momentum of what was going on. And then we just started bouncing off each other. And then it felt like a chat just in the pub with your mate. So it felt like a chat. You know, just walking down the street, it didn't feel like we were in a studio being recorded under bright lights. And that was just like, I was very skeptical, of course, because, you know, if you make a decision like that, it's a big decision. If it goes wrong, you know, you're in trouble. But the fact it went right and it's been great, it was honestly one of the best decisions I've made so far in terms of the podcast and the business side of things. And he's been awesome. So yeah, I'm massively grateful that he decided to come on, and now he's sticking with it as well. Yeah. And like I said before, we've become great friends, so it's been awesome.
And he's a bit older than you, isn't he? Have I read that? Did I read that see that right somewhere? He's a bit older than you, or is he not?
Yeah. So I'm 21. Joe's just turned 29.
Yeah, so there's...
So it also provides like a different aspect where he's kind of gone through my
exactly.
age. And I've sort of gone through the sort of like teenage, probably about 3-4 years ago, whereas he's gone through my age now, 3-4 or however many, 6-7 years ago. But it, that just provides like a different, you know, different aspect where he's gone through my stuff. I've gone through the people who are watching 16 to 18 stuff more recently, and he's gone through it all. And that's actually, I didn't think about that when I asked him to come a co-host, but when we talked about that and having his different perception on things, and especially with people like Alex who came on the podcast, is Joe's not that far off on age from Alex. I think Alex said he was 31. Yeah. So they kind of were around the same age. They grew up doing the same things, whereas I didn't do the same things as them, but I can relate to what they're talking about just from a younger point of view. So I think it's great that we sort of got that age difference, because I feel like if he was the same age as me, we might have not had as great a chat as we did with Alex, and we might not have been able to relate to him more as Joe did. So yeah, that's been awesome as well. That sort of 8-year gap has worked out really well.
Yeah, it sort of covers off more bases, doesn't it? And decreases the amount of lack that you may have in experience. Let's talk about what do you think the biggest issues that maybe young guys and, you know, teenagers are going through, and what did you find refuge in growing up in your later sort of adolescence that you would advise to other young men out there? That was a big question.
Ooh,
that was two questions actually, wasn't it? Do the first one.
I think
sorry,
I think the things which people are struggling with is sort of finding purpose.
Yeah.
And that was probably my biggest problem, was I felt like I didn't have a purpose. I felt like I was constantly comparing myself to people on social media. And for me personally, you know, that's so damaging, especially at that age when you're hormonal, you're in your teens, you don't really know what's going on in life. You're not mature. You're mature, but you're not mature enough to make clear decisions. And I think that constant like comparison of, you know, comparing yourself to richer people you see online who, you know, might not even be that rich if you're money focused, or comparing yourself to that guy in the gym online and you're like, why can't I look like him? But you're only like 16, 17, or you see some, you know, on my end, some rugby player who just got a contract and you're like, oh, why can't I get a contract? Mm. That sort of constant comparison with everything, I feel so damaging with social media. And I think social media as a whole is great. It's awesome. It brings people together. It provides, you know, a unique perspective on things. You know, some of the best memories I've had have been from social media with my friends, you know, during lockdown, you know, when I was 19, 18, you know, playing a video game with them. Like, some of the funniest moments I've had are from that. But it also can be very damaging at the same time. Like I said, you know, comparing yourself to people, sort of getting engrossed in this social media world, which you kind of do have to separate. And I'm massively addicted to this thing, massively addicted to my phone. I still am now. You know, I spend maybe 6 hours a day, I think it says on there. But it's hard when you're doing like a podcast like this and you're posting on social media to find that balance where you can cut it off as well. So I think that's sort of the damaging thing with social media for the younger people at the moment, is addiction, you know, comparing yourself, and also lacking your purpose, because, you know, you don't feel like you need to work for things anymore. You know, everything's online. You know, if you want to write an essay, it's online. You know, it's easy to sort of get lost in all this social media stuff and use it as the easy way out for schoolwork, for life in general. You know, instead of chatting to girls, you could go on, you know, porn, whatever it is. You can gamble online. It's all these like different things, which are, I'd say, are the negatives of it.
Yeah,
but I reckon that's what the problem is, especially for, I say, for young men, because that's what I've experienced. Those were mine for sure. And I guess the way you can kind of deal with that is, you know, just comes back to this point of self-awareness. You know, if you are on your phone for too long, can you recognize that, and can you put it away? Can you go outside for, you know, for a 30-minute walk to clear your head?
that's literally one of my favorite things at the moment. And it makes me sound so old, but I literally love just putting my phone down when I'm having a stressful day doing work, put the phone down, go outside and walk without my phone and sort of just being in my own head and stopping comparing myself to people on social media. You're living your own life. You know, if I'm not comparing myself to Chris Williamson or Joe Rogan, who have a podcast, and you know, what you're doing is your journey.
Yeah.
And I think when you start to realize that and you stop comparing yourself, you just become so much happier. Yeah. And you become more fulfilled and you find that purpose again. And you start working on these small steps over and over and you keep building what you're doing. And I think that's kind of the way you break out of these things.
Yeah. Don't compare yourself to who someone else is today. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday is one of Jordan Peterson's rules for life, which is an incredibly pertinent and powerful rule. So you're absolutely spot on. And
I love that.
Yeah, it's great. And yes, you're right. Like being we're full of, there's so much temptation. And as a society, because we're so consumer based, they're kind of subtly and periodically taking things away from us that were slightly more organic and human, and they're selling it back to us, or yeah, I suppose selling it back to us in a more artificial manner. So, well, you know, online dating and porn and, you know, fast food and all these temptations, like it's easier as you get to a slightly an older person. Maybe not, but maybe for some people it is. I found it has been for me. But when you're like 15, 16, like those sort of urges and those desires, they're so new, they're so powerful. And unfortunately, the temptation is only going to increase. Like the introduction of AI, like some of the adverts that I see on Instagram, I'm like, oh, that's really bad. Like, if you follow, like, I'll say exactly what it is. You know, you can get like virtual, you can talk to virtual girls nowadays, can't you? You pay for a subscription and you can design your ideal girlfriend, and then you can talk to her and interact with her or them or it. And like, if you push that phenomenon down the path, you get to a really, really dangerous and dark place. And I just hope that as a society, we, as much as we, because you know, pornography drove the internet. Like, what a lot of people don't know about the internet is that in the early days of the internet, it was men seeking out pornographic images and videos, which drove the expansion and the development of the internet, because there was so much desire for it and so much money to be made from that drive. And it's the same with human evolution. Like, the reason we're a species that looks the way we are now, and the reason we have all this incredibleness surrounding us, is because men seeked out erotic, and men used feminine beauty as a motivator. And so, you know, there's sex is money. And for young men growing up now, as a society, as much as that is inevitable, the path that we're going down, I just hope that we don't lose too much of touch. And I don't know where we'll go. Big topic.
It's just worrying, isn't it? It's just worrying. Like, I'm kind of grateful. I know this could sound bad, but I'm kind of grateful that I'm, you know, not going through school like kids are at the moment. Yeah. I'm kind of glad I've gone through it and I'm an adult now. I just think it's such a tough time. Yeah. You know, it's such a confusing time at the moment with what's going on. You know, all this artificial intelligence stuff, you know, it will, in my opinion, take jobs, as we know. It will do all this, but I think it's just allowing people the easy way out of everything. And especially if you want to get anything, like, you can just get it like that. And I think that just, it ruins you a bit, in my opinion.
I agree.
We're all like guilty of this, and I'm guilty of this now. But I think just being self-aware, as I keep saying, is probably the main importance of all this stuff, is knowing that it's causing you a problem and just minimize it, because you can't get rid of it. Like, we're living in a world, you can't escape these things. You can't just live in your own world off the grid. Well, you can.
You can.
But I can't for what I'm doing. But I think that's the problem with it. And I feel like it must just be so confusing being like 14, 15 at the moment, especially I'm talking the perspective of a male, because obviously I've gone through this stuff.
Yeah.
But it must just be very confusing being at school at the moment and, you know, going through all these things online and feeling like you have to compare yourself to certain people. And it's a very strange one that's going on currently. And I hope it gets sorted, because I really don't want it to affect these kids growing up. Because I know if I was in the headspace that I was in when I was, you know, 15 to 18, it would have completely ruined me with what's going on with all this stuff at the moment and losing my purpose even more.
Yeah. And especially if you're like a sensitive teenager, sensitive person, like young person growing up, like, because then I kind of like, I think of an analogy, and this is applicable to like so many different things, but if you imagine everyone is stood in a swimming pool, and like some people like are 2 meters tall and some people are like 1 meter tall, maybe some people are 3 meters tall, doesn't matter, it goes up as high as you want it to, and then you imagine that the water is at like 1 meter 10, so there are some people who are like can't even breathe, can barely breathe, they're like really sort of, and when you add complexity to a world, to a society, it's like putting more water in the swimming pool, so that eventually some people, the water just, and they just, they, you know, they're really, those people who are barely hanging on, it affects them worst. And you know, it's applicable sort of economic things as well, and so and that's what, you know, because it's hard being a sensitive young person growing up. I can definitely vouch for that. And I'm sure you can as well. So it is, they're the people that will be impacted mostly, the most. And, you know, the talk of like toxic masculinity and things like that, it's always the ones that are more introspective and considerate that will take that more on than, you know, the ones that don't give a fuck, you know, the bravado wankers, the Andrew Tates of the world, they don't care. They'll just do what they're doing no matter what. It's irrelevant if you talk about toxic masculinity. If anything, you'll just encourage them even more, which is what we're actually seeing. So it's a tricky time for young people, but that's why we'll do the podcast.
Yeah, it is.
So they can watch them.
Of course.
Right, I won't we'll do a couple more questions, but I won't take too much of your time. It's called the Breaking Point podcast because I'm interested in like if people have had a breaking point where they thought this is really difficult, I need to change something, I can no longer avoid doing something, etc. What was, you're very, very young. I think you must be the youngest person I've had on the podcast, to be fair. So if you don't have one, that's fair enough. But have you got a breaking point where you thought this is a time for a change or a time for a reflection?
Yeah, I think my breaking point, I think I've only had one breaking point so far. Is what I mentioned earlier was when I was just incredibly depressed. I couldn't wake up. You know, I just felt like I couldn't carry on anymore. I had no purpose. I had no drive. I literally couldn't get out of bed. I know it sounds so ridiculous when you say it back of where I am now. Yeah. But I literally generally couldn't get out of the bed. I felt like someone was pulling me down on the bed and I couldn't move. And I remember one day literally just crawling out of bed, literally crawling to the bathroom and just stood up, and I just felt so emotionally drained. And I was just, that was kind of the point where I was like, it's sort of now or never. I can keep living like this. I've been, you know, sort of self-loathing in my own problems for months now, probably about 6-7 months, or I can, you know, get up and today I'll make a change. And the small step today is I'm going to have a shower and brush my teeth at this time and go make my bed. And that was literally it. as all I did for the whole day, but that took so much energy out of me. And I think that was that was probably my breaking point when I went in that depressive state, and then being able to come out of it after 6-7 months slowly. You know, I still go through this stuff. It's still there, but it's just learning to minimize these things. You know, they're never going to go. And I think learning to minimize it, learning to control it, to become self-aware, to understand why you're acting a certain way. Why was I not able to get out of the bed? Did I have a purpose to sort of get out of the bed? You know, did I have something to look forward to? Did I have something to do? No. But it's all these different things. And obviously it's a mix of chemicals in your brain, which are different at that time as well, you know, going through these things. But, you know, in terms of depression as a whole, you know, you've got 264 million people of all ages, of, you know, every race in the world who are going through these things. And I just think looking at your sleep hygiene, regular physical activity, you know, being more socially connected. And by physical activity, I don't mean going to the gym and lifting heavy weights. I just mean, even if it's just standing outside and just, you know, having a wander around your garden, these little things helped me so much through my sort of breaking point 100%. Then, which I couldn't recommend more to people.
Yeah. Taking things back to the basics and looking at the things you do. You said something right at the beginning. You said, I did something and it was a minor thing. And you know, I thought, no, there's not a minor thing. There may not be such a, nothing we do may be minor. If one way in perspective, everything you do may be a major thing that you do. It's quite a scary thought to sort of hold, but that may be the case. Which one would you rather? Which way around would you rather? But yeah, you're right. Take it back to basics. Just look at what you're doing in life and go from there. And that's great.
Small steps.
Small steps. Yeah. Small steps. One step at a time. Tom, awesome, man. Thank you so much for...
Preach it more, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. Small steps. Maybe that's what I'll call the... I'm always trying to think of a title for the podcast. I always do like, what? How do you title yours? What do you do?
In terms of the overall podcast?
Yeah, how'd you title the podcast? When you
So, a bit random. I use this software called Podium, which you put the MP3 of the podcast into, and then it sort of breaks it down, sort of like the title suggestions, what's gone on in the episode, nice. The transcript, et cetera. And then I never pick the titles it suggests, but... I always sort of get a feel for, you know, the overall podcast, what's gone on. And then you could use ChatGPT or something. I just don't when I'm doing that. I feel like it's quite a personal thing. Yeah. So small, but picking that title is like, you know, it's just how I feel. And that's kind of how I do it. I take a main point, I'll put it in there, then I'll put the name and stuff afterwards. And, you know, like you said there, small steps make the biggest difference. You know, for me, that would be a perfect title. Yeah.
I won't use that then, because that can be yours at some point in the future. That's fair.
No, feel free if you want to.
Maybe. I tend to use like a quote, although often it's not actually a quote. I just like, it's half a quote and half I've just sort of changed it a little bit to make it look better. But we'll work out. Anyway. Tom, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really, really appreciate you talking to me, and I really appreciate everything you're doing. And yeah, we're in a similar position, but you've got 3 years on me, so you've got these next 3 years to sort of just grow and get better and better and better. So, and that's great. I would.